Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. I am Jason O'Fear, as always, and we're here for another episode of Paranormal Horizons. And as always, here is beautiful and talented Sherry Pang. Sherry, how's it going?
Pretty good, Jason. How are you?
Doing okay. I'm staying out of the heat. Boy, we're getting so much heat up here in Portland, and I don't like the heat, so I pretty much stay wherever it's air-conditioned.
I know. How you're staying in air conditioning? That's wonderful. Yeah, I ran this morning and it was it was warm. It's warm, but yeah, hopefully it's just temporary. I don't know if it is or not, but hopefully it is.
You're running in the heat. Oh my God, I don't even want to walk. I don't even want to walk to my car in the heat. You are
yeah,
a brave soul.
Yeah, we ran early this morning, so. You know, it was a good thing. We ran in the shade, and, yeah, I'm not running as intense as I used to be. But, yeah, just getting some cardio. For me anymore, it's not so much a competitive and placing in the top six teams and in our age division for Hood to Coast or anything like that. It's more, it's just more social interaction and connections. That's what I like about it anymore. But you'll see what happens. I'm doing some other stuff and kind of cutting back on my running. So how about you, Jason? How was your week?
Busy as usual, just working, you know, in the old hospital, saving lives, doing all that fun. It's always hectic.
Yeah.
And enjoyed being off today, but unfortunately I have to, my schedule's adjusted, so I have to go first thing in the morning and do my thing. So I'm not too thrilled about that, but I am thrilled about you've done a lot of legwork and you got us a great guest this evening, and I see he's called in, and you got us Ross Allison.
Yes, Ross Allison is a first time coming on the show, and yeah, just a really nice guy. He has a wealth of information, a wealth of just experience in the paranormal, and we're going to just kind of run with it. We're going to see, you know, how, you know, what we want to talk about. We'll just kind of play it by ear, and if there's any listeners that want to call in, they can call in at 1-215-383, and it's 3999, so it's 1-215-383-3999.
And without any further ado, I see Ross has called in, so let's get him in right now. Hey, Ross, welcome to the show.
Well, thanks for having me.
Hi, Ross.
Hello.
Hey, good to have you on the show for the first time. It's wonderful. We've had David Weatherly, and, you know, now we have you. No telling. It's wonderful to have you, and it was good to have met you at the Oregon Ghost Conference.
Oh, yeah, definitely. In fact, David was just here this weekend, so I spent the weekend with him. He came up for Friday the 13th and helped us run a celebrity ghost hunt at Spooked in Seattle.
Oh, wow. How did that go? Is that a lot of evidence?
Oh, yeah. No, it's great. It's one of our events that we run. We take people on a ghost hunt through the Seattle Underground. And every so often we try to bring in a big name, you know, just make it fun for people to come out and hear about their experiences and then get to go ghost hunting with them. So David came out for the Friday the 13th event, and it was a lot of fun. And then I kind of took him around, you know. Yesterday we went to Black Diamond Cemetery, which is a very well-known haunted cemetery out here in Washington. And then I took him to see Jimi Hendrix's grave as well. So.
Oh, wow. Where was Jimi Hendrix buried? Where is he?
It's he's buried in Renton as well. So he's out there. I want to say it's Greenwood. I think it's Greenwood Cemetery in Renton.
Wow.
You said Seattle has an underground. I wasn't aware of that. Is that similar to the Portland Shanghai tunnels where they were Shanghaiing people and putting them on boats? Yeah. For some reason, it never crossed my radar.
Yeah. Seattle's pretty much known for the Seattle Underground. It wasn't mainly for Shanghai, but they did shadier businesses, you know, opium dens, prostitution, you know, gambling, and of course speakeasies and stuff like that. That all took place in the the underground.
Oh, very cool. Now, we didn't give you, I wanted to give you an opportunity to give kind of a expanded bio of yourself to the listeners who may not be familiar with you. If you could let everybody know a little bit about yourself and what you do.
Well, I've been investigating the paranormal for close to 30 years now. I started the oldest ghost hunting group in the Pacific Northwest, known as the GHOST, which stands for the Advanced Ghost Hunters of Seattle-Tacoma. I've written 6 books on the topic of ghosts. I also started Spooked in Seattle Ghost Tours. So if you're ever in the Seattle area and want to do some ghost tours, definitely look us up. Or we even do ghost hunts where we take you ghost hunting. But I also started the first death museum in the Northwest as well. So if you like the morbid stuff, like, you know, coffins, mourning jewelry, skulls, and, you know, anything death related. We even have haunted dolls and all kinds of haunted toys. So definitely check that out as well. So I've been pretty busy. You know, I've pretty much have become one of the only full-time ghost hunters in the Northwest. So I, you know, keep pretty busy with traveling, lecturing, writing books, all kinds of fun stuff.
So, Roth, when I saw you, you had quite a collection of these dolls. Are each and every one of them that you have collected, is there a story behind each and every one of them, or did you get it off you? If you don't mind me asking, but was this something that was pawned off to you because, hey, I've got a really bad doll and I just don't want it, and you just, they gave it to you, or is this something that you sought out?
Oh, it's a little bit of both. A lot of times we receive haunted objects from individuals that have retrieved them in their household, and they just don't like the feeling it gives them, or maybe it causes, you know, bad luck with them, and or there could be some sort of, you know, haunting tied to them, so they'll definitely donate it to Spooked in Seattle. And then there's just a handful of them that I've actually, you know, came across and pursued myself. So it's a little bit of both.
How does the haunting of objects work?
In my understanding, that you are the co-author with David Weatherly of Haunted Toys. Is that correct?
Yes, yes. Me and David did Haunted Toys together. And then we have another book coming out this summer called Haunted Ships and Lighthouses.
Oh, wow. Cool.
Mm-hmm.
How does
and
the
I'm sorry,
haunting
Jason,
of toys...
you had a question? There you go.
Oh, yeah. How does the haunting of toys work? Like, does somebody like imbue their essence or spirit into them, or?
Well, there's various different reasons why a toy could easily be haunted. It could absorb the essence from the person that owned it. Some people, you know, claim that spells could be put on them, or even some sort of spirit could attach itself to that object as well.
Is there any way to know if, like, an object is haunted, or is it just people typically see strange things or strange happenings when they attain the object? Is that typically how somebody identifies that there's paranormal activity associated with it?
Well, again, there's quite a few different reasons or things to look out. One of the things is, you know, when you bring this into your home, does that when strange things tend to happen. Also, too, you can find that some of these toys can actually start to becoming, as we always say, a tripping hazard, where it can actually become harmful. So you just look for a lot of the, you know, strange activity that seems to trigger whenever it's around. So that's some of the things that we would look for. And sometimes it could easily be that inner feeling that you get when you're around that object, you know, that fight or flight type of feeling.
I always
Do you
think
believe
of, like,
that people can bind a soul into an object, whether it's a doll, anything, furniture, anything like that, Ross?
Oh, yeah. When it comes to ghosts, we find that there is an attachment to a person, place, or thing. So easily somebody, you know, living can become obsessed with an object. It doesn't have to be a doll It could be any kind of toy. It could be a piece of jewelry, and it could be furniture, even a home. That's why a house could be haunted as well, because you know, somebody put great love and care and money into a home.
Were you able to hear that, Jason?
I think we had a bad connection there for a second. Are you still there, Ross?
Okay.
I'm still here. Can you hear me?
Okay.
Oh.
That was weird. You were just like,
yeah, I know that was
sudden.
Weird.
Yeah, it was like you were just so distant, and you got almost cut out.
I'm sorry.
Uh-huh. You'll have to listen to it. You'll hear it. You'll understand. But anyway, so it can happen. So a person may have, like you said, have an attachment to a piece of furniture, and it so happened it's in the family, and so-and-so gave it to somebody that may be that person who is deceased that is attached to a piece of object or furniture or whatever, may not like the other person. So actually cause disturbances or problems with the family, knowing that that person who is deceased did not want or like that person, correct?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Definitely.
Wow.
It makes me, second guess myself when I want to go to the local thrift store, the antique shop, because then I'd be wondering if something could be haunted or not.
And you're right. You never know what you're going to get when you purchase a lot of these used items. But it doesn't always have to be used as well. You know, you think about somebody who, you know, is a craftsman or somebody, you know, who, you know, creates jewelry. There's a lot of energy and creativity that goes into a lot of these objects, and a little bit of them could easily be attached to that as well.
So do you find that if you can clear that item before you purchase it, is that a cure or may not also be a cure? What do you say about that?
Like cleansing an item?
Exactly.
Yeah, I definitely would suggest, you know, go with your belief system, whatever you need to do to protect yourself. So if you are going to be bringing in a lot of antiques, used items and stuff like that into your home, you may want to consider, you know, doing some sort of cleansing or, you know, prayer or whatever you need to do. That's, you know, buyer's choice, you know. You know, buyer beware is when you buy a lot of this stuff.
So the objects can be cleansed if you get them. So you don't necessarily have to throw them in the trash or anything like that. You can clear the energy out.
Well, I believe there's certain people that would practice that and believe that, and I totally would respect that. You know, when you're talking about, you know, ghosts themselves, you know, I don't practice any type of ghost busting. My, you know, main practice is to document phenomena. You know, that's why I write books, and hopefully to, you know, collect pieces of evidence to help support many people's claims. So we don't do a lot of, you know, cleansings when we come across situations where there could be spirits. But I would definitely encourage somebody who might be in a situation where they wish for their property or an object to be cleansed, I would definitely forward them on to people that could do that.
That's definitely, yes. I feel, to be honest with you, I feel there's no guarantee. You know, you could do whatever you can to cleanse, but, you know, sometimes the spirit may be, you know, have their own agenda, and it's like a haunted doll, you know.
I agree.
How many times a person maybe have cleansed or had the knowledge, but, you know, a haunting's a haunting, and sometimes no matter what, especially if the spirit is bound and you don't know how to deal with it, you know, no matter what you can do, I'm just looking at the other side, having that balance is being able to see that maybe that's not possible. That's why they are tucked away, right?
Yeah, I've always said, you know, you're just going to, you know, burn some sage and say go into the light. I don't always think that that's the answer to any type of cleansing, you know, especially
that's
if something doesn't want to go.
Yep.
I think in some cases, if you're dealing with something intelligent, it almost may be like a counseling session for them, you know, to get them to finally let go and move on.
That's
Do you have
true.
Any compelling stories or investigations that you've been that you've conducted where somebody has acquired a haunted object and what sort of activity happened around that?
Oh my God, I wrote a book about it. Me and David, you know, both, you know, collected quite a few stories when it comes to, you know, especially toys. But oh yeah, there's tons, hundreds and hundreds of stories out there where, you know, you can have situations where things are attached to objects, you know, just when it comes to haunted toys, you know. I'm more than happy to share a couple stories from that. One of my favorite stories that I like to talk about is Mr. Creepy. He is actually a ventriloquist doll, and he actually was created in the 1960s by a retired ventriloquist artist. And in his retirement years, he would continue to perform from time to time. He actually goes back to the vaudeville days here in the Northwest. And he would create these dolls and perform every so often. And he created this this male character, and he also created a female character. What makes these dolls a little more, you know, unique is he made this male character in his likeness and the female character in his wife's likeness. But what makes them really odd is they actually reuse their real hair on these dolls.
Ooh.
So, unfortunately, the couple passed away in an accident. And in the estate sale, the dolls were sold as a pair. So this woman, she purchases them for her antique store. And she, you know, of course, puts them on a shelf behind the register. And they sat on that shelf for years. No issues whatsoever. And then, unfortunately, they ended up selling the building that her shop was in. So this meant that she had to move. So she packs up the dolls separately, and she puts them into storage. And they sit in storage for a little while until she actually gets a new location. And so, of course, she, you know, goes back to the storage unit, and she, you know, starts, you know, replenishing her store, and she comes across the male character, but she does not find the female. But she goes ahead and takes him to her store, and she, you know, unwraps him and puts him in a glass cabinet behind the register. Well, right away, she started having this eerie feeling like there was somebody constantly standing behind her and breathing down the back of her neck.
Wow.
She constantly just got the chills. She said she'd even come in some days and find that his head would be turned in another direction, or his eyes would be looking in another direction. And what I found, which really odd about this, is his eyes are actually spring-loaded. So the only way to move his eyes is you have this little trigger that you move, and you can slide his eyes back and forth. But once you let go of that trigger, his eyes spring back to the center. So you cannot get his eyes to stay left or right. It's impossible, because that spring will put him right back to the center. And I have witnessed this myself, where I'll come into Spooked in Seattle and his eyes will be looking to the left or to the right. And right when I go to touch him to figure out what's going on, his eyes spring right back to the center. So she's experiencing this. And she even said that she would actually come in some days and find that the glass case would be wide open.
Oh, my goodness.
So she, you know, was really freaked out about this, felt really uncomfortable. In fact, she's the one that named him Mr. Creepy. And so she put him at the back of the store on a bottom shelf so that she didn't have to deal with him on a daily basis. Well, I go to a lot of these antique stores and looking for all kinds of interesting pieces, you know, especially for my death museum. And I, you know, always ask these antique dealers, I said, do you have anything that's odd? And I'd let them kind of determine what they think is odd, because I'd like to hear their stories. And immediately she took me to him and she told me his story. And I thought, this is great. I would love to bring him here at Spooked in Seattle and give him a good home. And so I did. I brought him to Spooked. I put him in this big, you know, antique glass case that we had. And it was one of those glass cases that you literally had to pull it away from the wall to get access to the doors that were locked behind it. And it's a big, heavy case. So I actually had put him in the case, you know, put him in a nice position, shut the doors, locked it, pushed it back up against the wall. I come in next day, and I'm in the office, and I'm by myself. There's nobody else at Spooked in Seattle. And I hear this thud against glass. I'm like, what the hell is that? So I immediately, you know, I'm assuming something happened in the gift shop. So I go out, and I'm looking around the gift shop, and there's obviously nothing disturbed. So I'm trying to figure out, where did that come from? So I'm kind of walking around, exploring, you know, Spooked in Seattle, and I've come around the tables, and now I'm facing that glass case with all our haunted dolls. And I noticed right away that his head is now turned and leaning up against the glass. Well, I immediately take a picture just to prove that this really did happen. So here it is. I got this picture of him, you know, his head turned, leaning up against the glass, and I noticed that in the reflection, it was a totally different character. Where this doll, you know, if you ever see him, you can look him up online, you know, Mr. Creepy at Spooked in Seattle. And he's got a very, you know, cartoonish features, big round eyes, big round cheeks, you know. But when you look at his reflection, he's got these very droopy eyes, more elongated face, higher forehead. And he looks more lifelike than that cartoonish features. And I think that is the man that very well could be haunting this doll. And a lot of people always ask me, well, you know, why is he haunting this doll? And I think he's looking for the female counterpart. They hadn't been separated since the day they were created. And now he probably doesn't know where she is. So I have been now on a quest to try and find her so I can bring those two souls together.
This is why I don't like dolls. I think all dolls are creepy, and I would never have one in my house. Or at least where I sleep, because, yeah. I watch too many horror movies. I know how it ends, you know. They come alive at night, and they steal your soul while you're sleeping.
Oh, I hear ya. I definitely don't want to bring them into my home either. That's why I have a museum for them.
Well, hopefully they can find the other doll, and you can reunite them, and maybe the activity will quiet down.
And I think so. It very well could be. Like I said, I really feel that, you know, he's just kind of curious as to where she is. Because that's all he does, is he just turns his head. His eyes will, you know, look in different directions. He's just, you know, constantly moving around, just trying to look around to see where she could be.
I'm looking online right now. I'm trying to find a picture of Mr. Creepy. I want to see.
Go ahead
what
and post it on the paranormal timeline if you can. That'd be great when you have a chance, Jason.
Okay. So I've done some paranormal investigations, and I've definitely encountered things that were unusual. I've always found myself to be skeptical, and I don't know. There's definitely a lot going out in the world and the universe that we don't understand. But I've always been kind of skeptical about haunted things. But then you tell me this story, and it's like, well, it's, you know, it's, you know, it definitely adds, you know, some credence to the fact that objects can be haunted and stuff like that.
You know, it just depends on the object. You know, think of yourself. You know, has there ever been a toy? Or, you know, even like a blanket, you know, how some kids can get obsessed with a blanket and they just don't know how to let go of it, you know, and you have to wean them from that object. Or that. And if you think that there very well could be a situation where even when it comes to residual energy, where you have left some sort of attachment to a certain toy that you just loved as a kid, that was the hardest thing for you to give up or even lost. And somehow, you know, that energy can still carry on. You know, it's still a part of you. And especially, you know, when it comes to children, you know, there's so much creativity and so much energy that these children produce, you know, with their, you know, their active imaginations. It can somehow bring some sort of life to these characters, you know. Think of, you know, children that deal with, you know, imaginary friends. In some cases, you know, it's even been proven that some of the imaginary friends aren't imaginary friends. They're very well a ghost in the home, you know, and somehow that could besides that ghost being, you know, in the home, somehow when they do create these imaginary friends, that there is some sort of life force going into that object itself, and they're creating this, you know, this entity. You know, and it has been proven in many cases, not even with just children, where there's been, you know, cases where, you know, psychics have come together, or even groups of people can come together, and they will, you know, create somebody who didn't exist. And they'll give, you know, details as to how they look, you know, and what maybe what their life was like, and their career, and all these details, and all of a sudden, you know, something will manifest and actually start to cause, you know, disturbances, and will make claims that they are this individual that these people had created, because there's so much energy going into this. So, you know, who's to say that, you know, children can't do the same? You know, it's just a weird phenomena that, you know, people have experienced and has been recorded in research.
So the whole saying is, be careful what you wish for, right, Ross?
Exactly.
You never know, it has a life of its own, and it could take over, and you're just like, oh, boy, oh, gosh, oh, I should.
Yeah,
I did find a picture.
I was trying to remember. I was going to say, I was trying to remember that one case study that they did, and I think it was called the Philip Project, where a group of people came together and they created this guy named Philip. And lo and behold, you know, as they started to create this character, and you may have to correct me on this, but there was a project like that, and they created this guy named Philip, and he had actually started to communicate to them through, you know, various different forms of phenomena.
I did find a picture of Mr. Creepy, and you, sir, are a brave man. There is no way I would even entertain the thought of having that anywhere in my home or business or wherever. That is one creepy looking doll. And I'm going to post a picture of it on our Facebook page right now.
Cool.
So, Ross, tell us about your dead museum. I'm really interested in what is that?
Well, our death museum is a collection of all kinds of, you know, death memorabilia. We've got funeral advertisements from back in the days. We've actually got coffins. We've got coffins that date back to the 1800s. You know, we even have children's coffins. We have mourning attire, some beautiful, beautiful old Victorian mourning dresses, even mourning jewelry. If you're not familiar with that, a lot of the, you know, black onyx jewelry that they would wear, and the more unique pieces is the hair jewelry, hair from the deceased that they would create and braid into pieces of jewelry itself. So we have a lot of that. I even have some skulls from animals, and I actually have a human skeleton, a real one. Just all kinds of, you know, interesting pieces. In fact, if you're ever in the Seattle area on a Friday, if I'm in town, if you go to Spooked in Seattle and you see that there is the deluxe tour being offered, that is my tour, or I will actually give you a tour of the Death Museum and then take you out to a lot of the haunted places in the Pioneer Square area. So, yeah, it's great. I love it. It's kind of heartbreaking, too, because as I've collected these pieces throughout the years, you know, it's sad that, you know, I actually have a couple urns with the remains of people in them, and yet I don't know who they are. No one knows who they are. That's why they were donated to the museum. You know, I have the human skeleton of a young man that died in the early 1900s, and he donated his body to the university. It's sad I can't tell you who he was. I can't tell you his story. You know, and all this mourning jewelry that I have that, you know, once belonged to a family, or, you know, this is the hair of somebody that had passed, and I can't tell you who it was. And that's where it's just kind of heartbreaking, because you have a lot of these pieces that are so unique and should have a story to tell. You know, it'd be nice to tell you who they were, at one point in their life, but I can't. And I've learned that by doing this death museum, how much, you know, even death has changed in the past, you know, 50 years. How we reflect on the dead has changed quite a bit. We don't visit cemeteries as much as we used to. In fact, it's become more common that if somebody does die, we're known to have them cremated. And then to save some money, you might even just put them on a shelf in your home. And they'll sit there until the day you die. And then when you die, now somebody has to go through all your personal belongings, and then they come across this urn with, you know, ashes in it, but they don't know who it is. And no one can tell you who it is. And that's how I was able to obtain these two urns with, you know, people inside them, because somebody died and had these in their home and nobody knew who they were. And it's just, that's kind of heartbreaking. You know, they say now most people, you know, reflect on the dead by visiting their Facebook page. You know, you'll go on and say, you know, I miss you, wish you were still around. And that's how much it's changed quite a bit. You know, we don't reflect as much on the dead anymore. We're so busy with our own lives, so caught up on other things that we don't ever look back unless it's an anniversary of, you know, somebody's death or their birthday or a holiday. So it's really opened my eyes by, you know, getting involved in the death customs.
I think we're so distracted with technology and everything else. Not a lot of people probably actually focus on death, or I don't know. That's a guess.
Right.
I know I find myself distracted, you know, with Facebook and the internet. I'm not really thinking about, you know, what's going to happen to me when I die or when am I going to die. But I imagine
but
that's
how
pretty
often too, you know, do you think about those that you did love or knew in your lifetime that have passed? You know, it's like, you know, how often do you get a chance to reflect on their lives?
I'm very trying to connect very much with my ancestors. And maybe it's because it's a, you know, it's an Asian thing, but, you know, honoring your ancestors that have gone before you and being able to acknowledge and respect and just pay your, you know, just pay your respect for them. It's a big thing in our culture.
And you're absolutely right. There are a lot of cultures out there that do pay more respect to the dead. You know, but then you come to American culture and, you know, we're losing touch with that. You know, the customs have, you know, faded in time as well. And a lot of that has faded in time because of the expense. You know, we used to put a lot more time, care, and energy into our dearly departed. But now to do the customs that we used to be able to do is so expensive.
Yes.
People can't afford that anymore. You know, we can't afford elaborate, you know, coffins and, you know, big monuments to reflect on our loved ones. You know, it's gotten so expensive, and that's why people don't, you know, burial is becoming, you know, obsolete as well, because, you know, it's so expensive to bury somebody, so it's cheaper to cremate them. And now you've got such a smaller amount of this person that you once loved. They're now in ash form, and now you can just throw them in a vase, you know, and put them on the shelf, and it's so much easier. And so we've lost a lot of our cultural, you know, practices. And a lot of that reflecting on our loved ones. Because you're right, we are distracted. There's a lot more going on in life, you know. We've got constantly things, you know, constantly in our hands 24/7, you know, to keep us occupied that, you know, we don't get the time to sit down and think about those that we once loved.
Now, with your
objects that are haunted, are they, like you said earlier, it could be anything. It doesn't have to be dolls. It could be a knife, any type of residual energy that a person has an attachment. And I always, you know, to me, as a psychic medium, it's not just only that. It could be clothes, too, you know.
Yeah,
I just tell you this short story that when my stepfather had passed away, I sold his car because I didn't want the car he had. I sold it to a childhood girlfriend, and she's been in three accidents after she took possession of the car. I knew after the first one, it was my stepfather saying he did not want her to have the car.
Hmm. Yeah, no, clothes, definitely. You know, there's stories, lots of stories of wedding dresses being haunted as well, you know.
Really?
Such a special moment going into, you know, a ceremony that, you know, sometimes that there's attachment to that dress as well. So, yeah, clothes, jewelry is constantly known to be haunted. And there's a lot of pieces of jewelry out there. You know, look at the Hope Diamond is known to be cursed. You know?
Yes.
So, yeah, clothes can definitely, you know, especially if you had a favorite piece that you used to wear all the time.
So do you collect different things, not only just dolls, but pieces of jewelry or any objects that you find, like you said, have an interesting story behind it?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I would.
Okay.
I pretty much am open to all kinds of different pieces. It doesn't have to be a doll or a toy. We do get a lot of dolls because dolls do tend to have more of the common phenomena of creeping people out. So it doesn't always have to be a ghost story attached to it. It just could be a creepy looking doll that no one wants to look at anymore. So every once in a while people will just send those, you know.
Have you ever encountered an object or during a tour or investigation where you got a spirit attachment? We hear a lot about that on the show where people have gone on an investigation and something follows them home. Have you ever had an object that was just too much to handle or had any kind of attachment issues?
No, I haven't. You know, it's one of those things that we're still kind of new, you know, so when it comes to our haunted objects, we're still on the lighter side. Nothing, you know, compared to, like, you know, Johnny Zaffis with a huge museum, you know, of all haunted objects. You know, of course, our museum is more death memorabilia with a small percentage of haunted objects. So there hasn't been anything that's come in that I would definitely have to say, I want to get rid of this. This is, you know, bad. So not yet. And I also find too, you know, I treat a lot of my stuff with respect as well. So I think if you're going to stir up something that's going to be negative, I think it's going to be, you know, probably because you mishandle it. You don't give it the respect that it deserves. So then you might be, you know, causing something negative to happen around it.
You hear that a lot where, you know, respect, like with the ghosts out in Hawaii, a lot of it has to do
mm-hmm.
with respect in the spirit world, but that's also true with the human world. You know, most people are reasonable if you
right.
have mutual respect.
And that, I think, protects me as I go out, you know, ghost hunting. Because, you know, I've been to some of the deepest, darkest places you can imagine. You know, I got to go through the Amityville house. You know, I've gotten into some of the scariest places you can imagine. You know, I find that, you know, what's kept me from, you know, running into any, you know, extreme negativity or any harm or anything from following me is the fact that I go in and I'm respectful. I'm respectful to the property and I'm respectful to whatever's there. You know, I don't go and taunt it. I don't go and say, okay, if you're here, prove it. I don't believe you. You know, and I think if you're going to go and doing something like that with the intent to, and I hate to say this, but piss it off, then you're probably going to cause something negative to happen to you. And that could very well be something following you home.
Which is never a good thing.
No, definitely. Why would you want to, you know, go into a situation where you don't know what you're up against? You know, there's still a lot of powers out there that we are not really sure what's going on out there, you know? And it's one of those things that I really try to encourage people just to, you know, always be safe and always be respectful because you don't know what you're going to be dealing with in the future.
Gosh, that's
so
true.
Do,
go ahead.
With all the TV shows out there, you know, it seems like ghost hunting has become super popular and everybody's buying their EMF meters and stuff. Do you think that's kind of risky that people are getting involved in these activities without really, you know, basing their education on what they see on TV? Do you think people are putting themselves at risk?
Oh, do you have a few hours? We could sit down and talk about this all night. Yes. I find that because of this popularity of ghost hunting, it has caused a lot of problems in the field. And it's caused a lot of issues when, you know, so many people aren't educated. You know, my biggest thing that I find that, you know, it's so easy to call yourself a ghost hunter now, you know, and it's so cool to call yourself a ghost hunter now. You know, back in the day, you know, before these television shows, you know, if you told anybody you were a ghost hunter, you know, people would give you the weirdest look and probably avoid you for the rest of the day.
Right.
But now you tell them you're a ghost hunter and they just all want to hang out with you all night, you know, and want to go on a ghost hunt with you because it's cool now. And it's kind of sad because, you know, a lot of these TV shows are misrepresenting the community and what really is going on in the field of paranormal research. Because like I said, it's so easy now for people to claim to be a ghost hunter. You just buy an EMF detector and a camera and you're a ghost hunter, you know, but there's so much more involved than what you're seeing on TV. And I always told people that, you know, if you want to get involved in ghost hunting, that's fine. But my biggest thing that really sets me off is when these groups start out of nowhere. They just pop up. And the next thing I know, they want to get in and they want to start helping families. That's where you're making a big mistake. When you're not properly trained and understand what's going on in the world of paranormal research, you have no business getting families involved. And I have found myself in time and time again trying to clean up the mess from previous ghost hunting teams because they freaked out the families because they just got done watching an episode of Ghost Hunters and they've, you know, thinking demons are now haunting the house. And so they're calling in a team and they're like, oh, yep, it's demons. You got a demon in your home, you know, and they don't know how to handle the situation. They don't know, you know, if it is a demon, you know, how to, you know, rid the house of a demon. So they freak out these families. And then they just walk away. It's like, yep, here we go. We got a possible EVP of something growling in your closet. Hope you enjoy. Goodbye. You know? Because in most cases, a lot of these teams are just in it for the thrills, the excitement. They want to experience what they're seeing on TV. And I say, it's great if you want to be a ghost hunter. Fine, be a ghost hunter, but don't get involved with clients. If you want to ghost hunt, go to a local cemetery. Go to, you know, a haunted room at a hotel. There's lots of public places where you can go and have, you know, interesting experiences. But you have no right to go in and get involved in these, you know, dealing with families that are possibly dealing with true phenomena. And you're just making matters worse, you know. So I can go on more, but
I had a personal experience with this back when I was doing the paranormal investigation thing years ago. Another group that was one of these spring up groups called us out to this person's house, and it became evident when we got there the reason they called us out there was because they didn't have any equipment whatsoever. And I'm just standing there and the family's asking him all these, you know, really basic questions, and he doesn't know the answers to them. And so he looks at me, and it was just this comical thing. And I'm thinking to myself the whole time, this is so ridiculous. Why am I even here?
Right.
It's just, yeah.
You're right. You're there,
I know exactly.
Because they didn't know what the hell they were doing.
Yeah.
They needed some support, you know? That's why you were there. And that is not uncommon. And that's what's sad. You know, these people have no right to be out there doing something that they really don't know what they're doing. But TV makes it look so easy. It makes it thrilling. It's exciting to be in a haunted place, sitting in the dark, waiting for something scary to happen. But the sad thing is it doesn't always happen. And that's where they get bored. They're like, oh, my God, you know, something didn't throw anything at me tonight. I'm done with this, you know. So,
I know people people with no experience or education, and what they're passing themselves off to homeowners as a demonologist.
Oh, my God.
It's mind-blowing. So, yeah.
It is. And the sad thing is, and it's not only just these ghost hunters, you know, issues, but it's the clients as well. The clients aren't going through and doing the research, the proper research, to determine, you know, who they should invite into their home. You know, it's one of those situations where they just type in ghost hunters of, you know, Portland, Oregon, and the first group that pops up is probably going to be the group they'll contact. Or more commonly is they'll contact all the groups surrounding that area, and the first group that contacts them tends to be the group that'll get in and do the investigation. So it becomes first serve, you know, first come, first serve. So you deal with a lot with that. And I've always told clients, it's like, it's fine. You want to have a group come in, you know, a group come into your house, that's your choice. But always go with a second opinion before you jump off the bridge, you know. Make sure that, you know, it's just like, you know, when you go to a doctor and a doctor tells you this is what you're suffering from, you might want to go to another doctor and see if, you know, if he's going to agree with that or give you another option. Well, you know, have another group come in and see what their experience is. But, you know, the sad part is that first group sometimes could have been the wrong group, and they've got you convinced that it's demons, you know, or, you know, succubus or something else that's freaking you out. And then another group comes in, and they tell you, no, it's just you have a shaky radiator going on here, you know, loose board over here, and that's what's really causing what you're experiencing. And they'll turn around and say, well, you know what, you didn't tell me it's a demon, so you're not the right group for me. You don't know what you're doing. That happens as well.
I know people that have been sued by the clients. You know, it's dangerous. There's physical hazards. All sorts of things can happen, even beyond the supernatural, that it can get sketchy.
Oh, yeah.
But it's very, very interesting. And, yeah.
So do you do quite a bit of paranormal investigations with hauntings and things like that?
Oh, yeah. I travel all over the world doing it. So, you know, my group is, you know, one of the most active groups out there. So we're constantly out there, you know, doing investigations. We, you know, just got back from California, where we had the opportunity to go down to Ione, California, investigate the Preston Castle, which was a famous, you know, boys' home, basically, for, you know, troubled boys. And it's gone, you know, through, you know, abandonment issues, and it's now falling apart on itself. And there's, you know, a group out there that are really, you know, trying to save this building. And yet, you know, they got a lot of ghost stories as well. So, you know, my team went out there and had an amazing time investigating that place. So, in fact, we're getting ready to go to Italy in just in a month or so, you know, just to, you know, check out some haunts out there.
That's awesome.
So, yeah, I'm very active in the field.
What are some of the more haunted places?
Some people will claim that they're demonologists and, you know, ends up having other problems, and you end up having to call in other people.
I'm sorry, I missed the first part of that question.
Isn't that something where some people may claim they're a demonologist, but the problem still exists into the place where, you know, you have to call in somebody else?
Oh, yeah. You know, and the funny thing is, you know, it doesn't take much for you to call yourself a demonologist as well. You could do an online, you know, school and get certified to be a demonologist.
Oh, really?
But, you know, people tend to forget. Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Look it up. If you want to be a
demonologist, wow, I didn't know that. And I know like some people there, like being a minister or priest, not a priest, but a minister, they can go in and just pay what, $5 or $10, and they say, oh, I can marry somebody now. You know, they don't have to be any affiliated. They make us some name called Universal Church, and they can claim themselves, oh, I'm a minister, and I can marry or do, you know, what do you call that, funerals and things like that.
Yeah.
That's one of my pet peeves.
It's so easy, like I said, it's so easy, you know, and the sad part is, again, what makes it so easy for them is the fact that the people that are calling on them is not doing the research. You know, they're not looking to see what they have to back them up. You know, so you know, a lot of this is, you know, it's great to, you know, to be out there, you know, ghost hunting. You know, I understand the thrill, the adventure of it. But, you know, you really need to start looking towards those who have the experience that have been out there, you know, longer. You know, I was just, you know, talking with, you know, Johnny Zaffis, you know, if you're not familiar with him, which, you know, I hopefully everybody would be. But, you know, he's, you know, related to the Warrens. But, you know, there's a lot of history there. And here's somebody who has the experience, but yet, you know, most people would have not acknowledged him if it wasn't for the fact that he had been on a television show. You know, he had his own series for a few years, you know, The Haunted Collector. But there are so many people that are like him that didn't have the opportunity to be on a show that get overlooked. Because, you know, most of these people that are getting television shows, I hate to break it to you, but a lot of them are just actors. You know, they just apply
for,
you know,
TV
a casting.
And this and that, or on radio, that kind of thing, you know, instead of really being of service. Absolutely.
Right. You know,
it makes a difference.
I'm seeing a lot of people. Yeah, like I said, I'm seeing a lot of people that have been in this field for many, many years, even before me, that aren't even being acknowledged for their work. And there's these people that, you know, see a casting spot, you know, being posted online looking for a ghost hunter, and they apply for it. And if they got, you know, the charisma, you know, and the attitude and, you know, make good TV, they get the spot. And then they're labeled as a professional ghost hunter.
Wow.
You know, if you look at the credentials of some of these people that have been on these television shows, you wouldn't find anything that can back them up. You know? It's scary.
I've been in the paranormal for 10 years, and I'm not an expert. But if anybody out there wants to cast me for a movie or a TV show, I'll pretend to be one.
Yeah. But, you know,
and this is just my personal opinion. It could be wrong. But when a person does this for part-time, I don't think that they have, you know, and they don't have their heart and guts into it. It's a risk, no matter what. Any job is a risk. But, you know, just being a weekender and saying I'm a ghost hunter is nothing compared to actually like what you do. It's your lifelong passion and your sole mission. You know, you live it, you breathe it, you're available when it's available. You know, you don't have another side-time job that just comes in when you fit in your schedule. Is that correct?
No, that is correct. I do not have a 9-to-5 job. You know, I make sacrifices. I don't, you know, have, you know, paid vacations, you know. I, you know, make sacrifices just to, you know, I don't have, you know, medical insurance most of the time because, you know, you go paycheck to paycheck with a lot of the things that you have to sacrifice to make ends meet. And it's a thing that, you know, I am my own boss because I choose to focus on lecturing. I choose to write books and I choose to, you know, do the ghost tours. That's my life, you know.
And you're serious, I can tell.
Yeah. And, you know, it's a little easier because I live life as a single man. You know, if I had a, you know, wife and kids, it'd probably be a little different because I'd have more people to have to take care of. You know, so that makes it a little easier for me. But, you know, it's a situation where, again, I make those sacrifices.
That's true. Wow, that's great.
I don't know a lot of people that can do that, that are able to not have to work. Everyone I know that's in the paranormal is like a weekend warrior, so to speak.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Well, you have to understand, I've been doing this before the television shows. So, you know, I had a pretty big foot in the door before all that launched. So that helped me out, you know, in establishing my name and credibility as well. But it is, you know, you do have to make some tough choices when it comes to, you know, pursuing this as a full-time gig. Because for one, it's a lot more competitive, you know. There's a lot more ghost hunters out there than they were, you know, let's say, you know, 20 years ago.
They're like pot shops. They're on every corner now.
Is that the new wave? I wonder what's going to happen in the next 10 or 20 years, right?
Everybody will be a paranormal investigator.
What else is going to take over, or how it's going to turn out. Yeah, UFOs and paranormal teams and psychic mediums, you know, it's kind of like a thing.
Well, you know, the thing is, you know, trends tend to follow the media. So as long as there's, you know, I mean, and they are, there's always going to be people that are going to pop up, you know, wanting to be ghost hunters. But, you know, but as, you know, more and more different types of paranormal shows pop up, people will follow. So, you know, now that there's, you know, a few more Bigfoot, you know, shows coming out and a few more, you know, monster shows, then you're going to find that there's going to be more of those types of groups popping up left and right. Because people do tend to follow media. So I think, you know, once the ghost hunting bug dies down and there's no more, you know, television shows about it, then, you know, the serious people will continue to do what they've been doing. And then, you know, it'll start to get a little more serious.
I think it's already past the apex. I think it's actually on its way down now, the whole paranormal ghost show thing. That's just my observation.
I don't know. There's a few more shows coming out. So
maybe it's not then.
The sad thing is they're getting more ridiculous.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that's the thing. It's no longer, you know, let's, you know, be serious and let's do some, you know, real ghost hunting. It's more about let's send some crazy people out in a haunted place and watch them scream and run away. You know, let's see how silly they'll get.
I've even heard of one that the team is doing it naked, you know, doing paranormal investigations in the buff, in their birthday suits. As a show.
Seriously?
When was that?
Yeah. I've heard about it a couple of years ago. I don't know where it's out of, if it's in the States.
Oh,
but
yeah, it was a long time ago, but nothing came of it. So.
Yeah, maybe it didn't air, but it's you're absolutely correct. It's getting totally ridiculous. All television is ridiculous anyway. So.
And I would just love to see something serious, you know. I want to see some serious stuff happen. I want to see people doing the research. The problem is, you know, people are looking for the instant gratification, you know, and now there are more tools to give them that instant gratification, like ghost boxes and ovuluses and, you know, whatever, Ouija boards and whatever they want to use. But they really don't want to do the real work when it's, you know, going in, recording for 4 to 5 hours and then have to turn around and listen to that 4 to 5 hours of recording, or same thing with video.
What did you guys use before all these EVPs and spirit boxes and all these new devices, or even using your phone now? What did you guys use? Is it a tape deck, like a cassette, or what?
Oh, we don't even use ghost boxes or anything like that, or our phones and stuff like that, because I hate to break it to a lot of people, even your listeners, but the people aren't aware that a lot of these devices are now manipulating the audience by using GPS. They're also using voice recognition. They're using pre-recorded audio to give you the answers that you're looking for. Because especially with GPS, you know, you're carrying your phone around with you all day. And so when you go into a haunted place, especially a place that's well known to be haunted, and the GPS knows, oh, I know where you're at, now it's got a certain database of certain words that it'll start to spew out that's going to make it even more convincing to you that this is the ghost talking to you.
Absolutely.
Same thing with voice recognition.
Didn't know that. So, you know, you like one
yes.
of those like ghost hunting tools or whatever, they have like certain words, like a like dictionary vocabulary and things like that.
No, there's all kinds of manipulation going on, and it's so easy for them to do that now. You know, with technology, they can easily manipulate you guys, and we're finding a lot of these tools are doing that. And people are jumping on them thinking that they're the golden, you know, tool to ghost hunting. And it's like, no, you're being manipulated. And they clearly tell you, you know, in the small print, this is only for entertainment purposes only. You can't use this as proof to the paranormal. But, yeah, there's a lot of that going on because people will make a killing off of the ghost hunters that think it's legit. But I'm
it's
just trying
money.
To educate people. It's like, yeah, be aware of your tools that you're using.
I didn't know that. That's interesting.
Yeah, so, you know, my team is, I've always, you know, gone with the basic equipment that you can use because I've always told people, too, that there is no such thing as a ghost meter, even though there's some out on the market that they'll tell you you have a ghost standing in front of you. There's no device that's going to tell you you have a ghost standing in front of you. The best that we can do as paranormal investigators is we can only use devices that help us read the environment and lets us know if there's changes in the environment that we cannot explain. That's the best you can do as a paranormal investigator.
Is it like thermography where you can see the, you know, the different heat in the area, electricity,
yeah.
that kind
thermal
of thing?
Thermal imaging, Ross? Yeah, thermal imaging, barometers. You know, there's light sensors, you know, there's temperature gauges, just a lot of the basic, you know, environmental devices will hopefully help to tell you that there are odd changes happening in the environment, changes that should not be happening. And that's what you got to do to try and determine if you're dealing with something paranormal. Why is there something manipulating the environment? And how is it manipulating the environment? That's what we do.
And you have to debunk a lot of these things, whereas electricity, faulty things
exactly.
that may be happening around the area, all those kind of things.
Uh-huh.
Well, I'm looking at the time here. We're just about out of time, but I want to give you an opportunity. Now, where can people get your books and information regarding the museum and stuff like that?
Oh, definitely. Well, I always encourage people to definitely look me up on Facebook, Ross Allison Ghost Hunter, and definitely follow me because I do travel all over the place and I do a lot of live video feeds so you can actually watch me at some of these haunted places I go to. So definitely encourage that. And also, if you're ever in the Seattle area, definitely check out Spooked in Seattle Tours, and that's at spookedinseattle.com. And you can definitely see a lot of fun stuff. We were voted number 6 of the top 15 ghost tours in America. So that was a huge thing. Also, too, if you want to check out some of my books, you can definitely find them on Amazon. And again, just look up Ross Allison. And you should be able to find a lot of my books out there.
Well, very cool. Ross, I want to thank you for coming on. We'll have to get you back on in the future. There's so much more we could be talking
about.
It's hard to fill.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
We could fill a lot more time. So thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you.
For
we
having
appreciate
me.
You, Ross. Thank you for your time.
Yep. And you guys be safe out there.
All right. You take care.
You too.
All right.
Bye-bye.
All right, Sherry, what do we got going next week?
Okay, so we have a psychic lawyer.
psychic lawyer from New York.
His name is Mark Anthony, and we're going to just see about answering questions about being a psychic lawyer. How does it tie in with the psychic work and what is experience? What can he do to help us? Any information? things like that. So for the very first time, we're going to have a psychic lawyer, very well known in the media, just like Ross, and yes, been out there. A lot of people know him, so we're very privileged to have him personally on our show this week.
Well, you do such a fantastic job at getting, you know, these high caliber guests, and
thank you. And the following week, we're going to have our own. He's been one of the top radio show hosts. The top 100, I think he, or the top 50, don't quote me on it, I'm not sure, but he's one of the very top radio show hosts in the United States, and I'm not sure, like I said, either the top 50 or 100, but it's Clive Lewis. Clive Lewis is our local radio show host. He talks about the paranormal, everything that we talk about, and much, much more. So we're going to have Clive Lewis in 2 weeks.
Yeah, the host of Ground Zero, the nationally
syndicated show. Yes. What is it? KEX? 1190 KEX? And what's the other show? It's on AM and FM. He's on the 300 syndicated show.
Yeah, all over the country. Very big guest. And I know we had him on, how long has it been?
Probably about 6 months ago, maybe 8 months ago. So, yeah.
Very cool.
We have the best of the best, that's for sure. People are just the top-notch in the field, highly respected, and just enjoy each and every person that we have.
Absolutely. Well, with that, I guess we'll bid everybody adieu. Hope everybody has a safe week, and we'll see everybody next Sunday at p.m. with the psychic lawyer. What was his name again?
Yes. Hey, guys, take care. Be safe. Stay cool in the hot weather. Stay hydrated. just be safe and just enjoy your family and love each other. So, anyway, take care. Peace.
Good night, everyone.